shot! Oh, baby, what a play!
This is Jeff Fedotin with Believe in Chiefs on the Believe Network, Kansas City's number one sports podcast network, the only place with a show for every team in KC and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? On this week's show, former Kansas City Chiefs offensive lineman Joe Valerio and I discuss rookie minicamp, the Donovan Smith signing, and some Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes notes. Joe, before we get to the just completed rookie camp, let's discuss the Donovan Smith signing. You know, there were a lot of people critical on this on social media because they thought the Chiefs spent big money, I think it was $80 million, to sign Juwan Taylor to play left tackle. But I love the Smith move. You can play Taylor at right, where he's played his whole career, or maybe a year later he ends up going back to left. You know, we had a whole tackle, and this fills it. And I think reports of Smith's demise have been exaggerated. He struggled last year, but he had injuries. He's only 29. You know, it's only a one-year deal, so not much risk. And if Smith breaks down or doesn't work out, Taylor is a great option. I'm curious your thoughts, being someone who has played offensive line in the NFL, your thoughts on this, Joe.
I think from an experience perspective, it makes absolutely perfect sense for Donovan Smith to be their left tackle. He's played over 8,000 snaps at left tackle, and Juwan Taylor has played zero, and almost vice versa the other direction. I think Juwan Taylor's played 18 snaps at left tackle, 4,282 NFL snaps at right tackle. Donovan Smith has 8,473 NFL snaps at LT, to be exact, and zero at right tackle. So, I mean, I think the math and the data speak for itself. That if I'm Andy Reid, you know, let's not try to, you know, fix something that's not broken and go with it, right? And I think that's what we're going to see, obviously. And, you know, I think Patrick Mahomes is the type of quarterback that, for some reason, having a, like, super premier left tackle versus having a right, you know, a super premier right tackle, I almost wonder if he's the type of quarterback that prefers to have his vision side, you know, his, what would be his, like, as he's looking down the field, right? He's seeing more coming from his right. You know, Patrick likes to get out into the right part of the area. He throws a little bit better when he rolls to his right than he does from his left. Not that he can't throw from his left and throw from his off foot, but, you know, I think it might be just as important to have a solid right tackle as it does to have a left tackle, because Patrick seems to sense things coming from the back side. And I don't think that's ever really bothered him. He's not John Elway or Dan Marino, like a stand up, sit back there quarterback who, you know, isn't going to feel pressure and is going to get, air quote, blindsided. Right. So, I mean, I think they're, for this particular offense and having somebody like Patrick, those positions are equally as important. Where I know everybody always wants to say, oh, the left tackle, it's the premier, you know, spot on the offensive line, and it's one of your premier spots in your whole offense. But, you know, in this day and age, with the mobility of the quarterbacks, the types of offenses that they're running with the RPO and everything, it's becoming more important that everybody on the offensive line is solid. And I think I make a little bit of an argument there that, for Patrick, that he'd almost rather have a better right tackle than he would a left tackle. So, you know, especially the way the Chiefs run the ball, right? They seem to be a little bit more, you know, heavy, you know, going to the right, at least in the past. So, you know, why not, right? Why not go with it? So I think it's a great move. It definitely is one of those moves. They're both roster moves, right? The Juwan Taylor and the Donovan Smith are roster moves that aren't going to keep us up at night, right? After we lost Andrew Wiley and we felt like, oh man, we're kind of, you know, and Orlando Brown Jr. is gone, and what are we going to do? I think we've got two incredibly solid tackles in right now in the mix with a very veteran interior core at this point. Even though they're all relatively young, they're still very veteran. Having Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith be, you know, rookie starters. And then, of course, you've got Joe Thuney, right? So, bam, look at that offensive line we've got all of a sudden, right? So, whew, I can put my head down at night on my pillow, and I can sleep well knowing that the offensive line's short up. We got Nick Allegretti you know, backing up multiple positions inside. He's veteran. We know he can start. We know he can play.
Which
he's proven himself.
Surprised about. We had touched upon how we thought that was a guy that might depart and be a starter someplace. What a luxury to have him, a guy who has started big games in a backup kind of utility role.
Yeah, and bring in Austin Reiter back, right? I mean, you know, yeah. He's a guy that, you know, he's been a starter. He was a starter on that first Super Bowl. We'll call it the first Super Bowl team. We'll go all the way back to the 60s to Len Dawson's first Super Bowl, but the first Super Bowl era for Andy Reid. I mean, he goes back. He's got Super Bowl and championship DNA. And, you know, at some point, you know, I think the Darian Kennard, I think that was still a good signing. I think he was still a steal in that draft last year. And of course, we're still, of course, waiting for Lucas Niang, right? We're still waiting for him to develop and be that backup so that he needs to be. So I think, and then of course you got the Wanya Morris, which I think was another fantastic pickup for a third round, still pretty high, but for not a first or second round pick, I think Wanya Morris was a really, really nice, pickup in the third round. So I don't know about you, Jeff, but I'm feeling really good. I'm knock on wood. I don't want to be overly optimistic or Pollyanna about it, but I feel really good about this offensive line going into OTAs.
Some great stuff there, Joe. Not only just the numbers, the snap numbers between the two guys, but some breakdowns of the right tackle versus left tackle. Just to follow up on that, really interesting what you said, how for the Chiefs, it might be more valuable, the right tackle, just the way Mahomes rolls out so much and is always on the move. And it sounds like that's a global NFL thing from the way you made it sound. So is there still a major difference in right tackle versus left tackle? What I mean is that, you know, is it still like the blind side rushers, the best guys are lining up on that side, or has the game just so completely changed that isn't an issue anymore?
Well, that's a great point, Jeff. I mean, I love that. I love that thought that you threw in there. But, you know, again, you look at the quarterbacks today and they're all different, mm-hmm. right? But you just don't have as many of those, what I would call statuesque quarterbacks, just, you know, kind of planting themselves back there. And when you did rush your premier rusher from the quarterback's left side, you absolutely were gaining an advantage, right? Where the quarterback didn't know where the rusher was coming from. And all of a sudden, you know, I just think about those Derek Thomas sacks where all of a sudden he was just on Elway. Like mm-hmm. before Elway knew what he could do, you know, Neil Smith coming from the right side, or the defense is left and the offense is right. You know, he can see him. He can see the big body. He can see where he's going. But man, Derek used to have so many of those sort of like sneak attack sacks that mm-hmm. were like all of a sudden he would turn on that speed and put a couple of moves on a left tackle and bam, he was on you. Same for most of the premier pass rushers back in the day that were coming off of the offense's left side. It does definitely give you an advantage because a quarterback can't react at all. And they just can't even, you know, they can't even make an adjustment where when you can see it coming from the right, you just, I don't know, it's just the way that quarterbacks, you know, think about it, right? Think about if you were to go out in your backyard and throw a football around, right? When quarterbacks keep their feet, you know, I guess for lack of better terms, they keep them, you know, parallel to the sideline, so to speak, right? Their stance. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty difficult to look left. It really is. If your back is sort of parallel to the line of scrimmage or to the sideline, it's really hard to see what's coming from your left side, especially as edge rushers come around the edge. And the deeper they get, the less they go out of your peripheral vision, right? So all of a sudden they're rushing and they're trying to bull rush the left tackle and they're kind of in your peripheral vision. All of a sudden when they speed rush around the edge, they're gone. They're out of it because you're the way that you're just physically standing as a quarterback, as a right-handed quarterback with your feet, you know, pointed towards the other team's sideline or, you know, parallel as they're lined up parallel to the sideline. So It's definitely still a thing. I still think quarterbacks are going to be facing the best pass rushers off of the left, and I still think your best pass rushing offensive tackle needs to be your left tackle, just the way that historically the NFL has been. But like I said, it's starting to change a little bit. You know, as quarterbacks are getting a little more mobile, they're lining up more in shotgun, in passing protection, in pass situations. You have to remember, in, you know, pass situations, sometimes even back in the day, when you were when you had that, like, always having your premier pass rusher on the left, taking the snap from under center made it even more difficult, because as you're doing your drop back steps, picture a quarterback taking a snap from under center and then doing that cross-legged, you know, drop back that they would do, right? They're really losing the vision of their left side, because mm-hmm. they're worried about their footwork. They're trying to look downfield at the receivers. And so, you know, as quarterbacks now are more shotgun focused, especially in passing situations, it does actually become a little bit less of an issue. So maybe we'll see over time a little bit of a change there.
Great stuff there, Joe. Well, betonline.ag is your number one source for all your basketball info, stats, news, and scores. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest player reports for this year's pro basketball playoffs, including Joe's 76ers. BetOnline is always your sports information headquarters this season, as we have you covered for all your sports wagering needs. Basketball, MLB, NHL, hockey, right to UFC and boxing. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to get your betting info, including live betting options and your favorite casino and card games you can play right from your home. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Be sure to use our promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. Joe, you know, the just completed rookie camp here, it went Saturday, Sunday, Monday, just 3 days. And to be honest, this is a little less exciting rookie crop. I mean, last year, yeah, the 10 picks, you had two first-round picks. You had a lot of holes the Chiefs were filling. The year before, you had Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the first round, a running back who they were going to get the opening day start pretty much. So this one's a little less exciting, a little less sexy. So I'm curious, I wanted to go back really kind of, Joe, and talk about when you were playing. I can't remember, how did it work? Did you guys, when you got drafted, did you have a mini camp? Did you have a rookie camp like this? How did it go in the 90s?
I'll tell you, it was an interesting offseason. So they had a rule that when you were coming out of college as either a free agent or drafted, you were only allowed to come to one mini camp. And then the next time they could see you was June 1st.
Wow.
So we were able to come to the mini camp right after the draft. So the way they did it back in the 90s is there was a mini camp right after the draft. So literally that next weekend. So I was drafted on, you know, I'm trying to remember if it was Friday or Saturday back then.
I think back then it was all Saturday. I think it was like
yes.
a one-day thing all Saturday.
Yeah, it was. I know it was April 21st. I just can't remember if it was Saturday or Friday. But oh no, it was Saturday. It was definitely Saturday mm-hmm. because I was on college campus on Friday night. And then so Friday night I went home, and then Saturday morning I was at my brother's house and our family home. And, you know, got drafted. And then basically they said, you're going to get an express mail package in the mail with airline tickets. Cause Jeff, no internet back then.
Yep.
So, you know, there was no boarding passes on your phone. So they had to actually send in a nice package. So I remember during the middle of the week, a really cool package came, you know, addressed from the Chiefs in either a Federal Express or a UPS overnight package. And it was pretty thick. It had like an itinerary in it. It had boarding passes and flight tickets, right, to go fly out to Kansas City for that next week. Like, I flew out on Thursday of the next week. So within like 3 or 4 days after getting drafted, I was on a flight to Kansas City for what was, in essence, mini camp, not rookie camp. It was mini camp. So I was there with all of the veterans and, you know, got to meet.
So
it was crazy.
Crazy. And also the timing of what you went through obviously was much – a more difficult and much more involved than this was just rookies in the camp and a lot of tryout guys, but the timing was kind of the same because these guys were drafted, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then the next weekend is when it starts. So kind of the same timing, but obviously your camp was much more involved. And it's interesting, Joe, you guys had it so much harder. The practices were so much longer, so much more physical and violent. But the one thing it seems like these guys have now is they have more frequent, you know, between OTAs and rookie camp, and then they'll still have mini camp and training camp. It's like, I feel that they're at the facility more, just a lot less contact. That's kind of what, is that accurate to say, Joe?
Yeah, well, what happened was the next step after that for rookies was now remember the Chiefs, the veterans were in, they were deep into, by the draft, they were deep into the offseason workouts. So the offseason workouts, you were allowed to stay and live all year, right? So not that you can't live and stay in Kansas City, but like you were allowed to come to the facility every day back then in the 90s. So, you know, the offseason program generally started, depending on how far we went into the playoffs, started anywhere from, I would say, March 15th to April 1st. So, let me just fast forward to the next year when I became a veteran. I mean, I was on March 15th, I started, you know, we started our formal offseason workout program. Now, I lived there full time. So I was working out even in January and February if we were out of the playoffs early. I was, you know, coming to the facility every day and lifting and, you know, getting any treatment that I might need. So, but back to the rookie year. So we weren't allowed to be back in Kansas City at the facility until June 1st, which gave everybody who was in college a chance to graduate. So the next time, so basically I graduated around the end of May, took a couple of, you know, days, school was then over. I didn't have any more finals or anything. So I was just working out at home. So I took a few more weeks at home. And then on like May 28th, I hopped in the car with my fiance, now wife, Jen, and we were engaged to be married. And we jumped in a car and started driving out to Kansas City down I-76 and then I-70 through Pennsylvania, Ohio, Illinois, Indiana. And, you know, next thing you know, we're driving up on a, you know, like May 29th or 30th, whatever that day was. And we were checking in to our apartment that the Chiefs had put us up for the month of June and July while we were there in Kansas City. So I became a regular member of the off-season workouts, which were, you know, 4 days a week in the weight room. And then we would do anywhere from 2 to 3 days of field work. And then we had one more mini camp sprinkled in there sometime in June. And then July 15th is when the off-season program ended, the formal off-season program of actually lifting with the strength coaches every day. And then, you know, we were kind of either – so nobody was taking attendance at that point. I stayed on for a little while longer because I wanted to be there. I wanted to have the tutelage of our strength coaches.
Yeah.
And then, you know, went home for about a week and a half before training camp started on July 15th. So, you know, left Kansas City probably around after the 4th of July and then came back to Kansas City within a week and a half to depart for River Falls, Wisconsin for 6 weeks of, you know, being in River Falls, Wisconsin.
For fun camp, right?
I mean, it was, you know, we used to joke, you know, Marty time was Lombardi time. And, you know, it was some days it was 3 a days. It was always 2 a days. Mostly I remember my rookie year, we went 13 days in a row of full pads. And then we would actually have special teams practices and walkthroughs at night. And then you had to sprinkle in your lifting. Full
pads. They definitely, like, I don't know how long that would take an NFL team now. I mean, that's probably more than the entire training camp. That might extend well into the season of how many padded practices is that.
I don't know if they have 13 padded practices for the entire season.
Whole year. Yeah.
So once it starts. So yeah. So it was totally different mindset and different way. But look, it didn't make it wrong. It doesn't make today wrong or today better or then better or then worse. It was what it was. That's how teams prepared. And you know, teams have adjusted. And you know, I guess it's helped with the injuries. I don't know. I mean, it definitely, a lot of it, you know, had to do more with, I think maybe, you know, sort of the head trauma, you know, of us hitting that much all the time. So I'm sure that it's probably helped there. I'm not 100% sure it's helped with like other types of injuries. I mean, because our bodies were so conditioned to being hit and taking hits and hitting other people that, you know, for me, that was, you know, I almost felt better conditioned for it, you know, because we hit all the time. Like it was, I stopped being sore because I was always sore. Like I can only imagine what some of the players must feel like, you know, after a big game on
after
Sunday
week
now.
One. Yeah, like how sore they must be. You know, Joe, really interesting stuff there. And I kind of want to mention something. I said that I don't think it's accurate what I said, that obviously there was so much more hitting and violence and physical nature when you were playing. But it also, it wasn't, the guys aren't, it sounds like, more at the facility now. They're labeled differently with OTAs and things like that. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you were actually at the facility even more.
Oh,
it's just the rookie camp, so to speak, rookie camp didn't really exist. You went straight into a different mini camp. But yeah, so that I just want for listeners who that what I said before was not exactly accurate.
Yeah, I would say, Jeff, I would say back then in the 90s, and because I don't know how it is today, actually, to be honest. I mean, but back then, you know, when you March 15th, when the offseason program officially started, okay, you know, obviously players had bonuses and in their contracts for if you made X percentage of those workouts. I mean, they kept very strict attendance at those. And so if you made a certain percentage of those, there were some pretty significant bonuses back then because Marty was incentivizing players to be around and to be, mm-hmm. to build the camaraderie and to work with our own strength coaches and also partake in some of the classroom work that we had. You know, I remember spending anywhere from 2 to 3 days in the classroom every off season from March 15th all the way through till, you know, mid-June, early July. And if you made, and I would say, and I'm not over-exaggerating, because I'm getting into that mode now where it's like, oh, well, we walked to school uphill both ways with no shoes when I was a kid, right? So I don't want to make it sound like we were, you know, tough guys or something. But like, I would say, without over-exaggerating, I would say 75% of the active roster players made 75% of the workouts during the offseason program.
That's great. Yeah.
So I would say, you know, if there was if there was 100 guys, you know, to use round numbers associated with the program back then, 75 of them were working out every day, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, maybe coming in for a little conditioning on Wednesday, pretty much from March 15th to July 1st. Which is pretty amazing. I mean, I felt like I was always there with my teammates. It wasn't like there, of course there were guys that, you know, said, hey, I'm going home for 2 weeks, or, you know, guys who were very established on the team, you know, guys who were making enough money that could, you know, sometimes even forego making every workout that hit their bonus. You know, guys like Derek Thomas and Neil Smith and, you know, John Ault and, you know, Joe Montana. I mean, there was always going to be a handful of players, but I would say 75% of the players made 75% of the workouts.
That's great. Well, Joe, we also had to talk about something else going on. Very cool that Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce have been everywhere. They both kicked off the draft in Kansas City. Kelce hosted Kelce Jam and also Saturday Night Live this offseason. And Mahomes was at the Met Gala. He gave the riders up signal at the Kentucky Derby. And then after that, later that night was at the F1 Grand Prix in Miami. And back at the Kentucky Derby, I just want to, you know, I know this was really frustrating for my parents and a lot of people on social media. KSHB, which was covering the Kentucky Derby, or broadcasting it, cut away from Mahomes during that Derby call, that riders up call, because they had a weather update. So I just, KSHB, don't... The Kansasians love Mahomes. They need their Mahomes. Don't do that again.
Yeah. Listen, anyhow, the weather's the weather. Jeff, the weather's the weather. Right? Look out the window. You can see what the weather is. You don't need somebody to come on your television screen while Patrick Mahomes is kicking off the Kentucky Derby to tell you that something's going on outside. But I got to say, my favorite thing was seeing – well, I'm obviously, we could do a whole podcast on just these two knuckleheads, right, and what they've been doing this offseason. But, like, I got to say, I'm a huge F1 fan. I'm a big horse racing fan, too. I grew up at horse tracks. My dad was he loved the ponies. So I was always – we were more harness racing than we were thoroughbreds. But you know, I grew up at tracks, so I do love horse racing. And, you know, so it was so cool to see Patrick there. And I love the pomp and circumstance around the Kentucky Derby and the, you know, and the Triple Crown. But I'm a huge F1 fan. And then to watch, you know, Checo Perez and Max Verstappen actually go 1 and 2 after Patrick gave them jerseys. I don't know if you saw that.
There was some great
social media posts where, you know, he gave them Patrick Mahomes jerseys before the start of the before, as we like to say in the F1 world, lights out. Before the lights out and away we go. Both of them finished 1-2 with Red Bull Racing. So yeah, really, really cool to see Patrick there too. I if there was one thing I wish I could have snuck to, or two things, snuck in. If I were on the Chiefs today, I would have begged Travis Kelce to let me come with him to see the taping of Saturday Night Live, and or see the airing of Saturday Night Live, I should say, and then to have gone into pit row with Patrick at the F1. Those would have been two humongous bucket list items checked off my list.
How cool a weekend from Patrick Mahomes. How cool an offseason. Now, I spoke to Travis Kelce before he was taking the stage on the phone. I wasn't backstage or anything. On the phone before Kelce Jam, which is basically like a music fest. And so there were also like food and other cool things at the old Sandstone Theater, now renamed, in Bonner Springs. But I actually asked him this question. And Joe, I'm curious your take. Any concern with, I mean, they've got all this stuff going on, Mahomes and Kelce, that they're going to be too distracted, that is this, for Chiefs fans, any concern there?
No, not one bit.
It's the off season.
It's the off season. These two guys could wake up in their pajamas in 2 months and they'd be just the fed. They're special players, but I think it, you know, look, there are two guys that are absolutely committed to being the best they can be. Neither of them are going to come in out of shape. You see the kind of stuff that Patrick Mahomes does in the offseason with, you know, down in Texas, bringing in receivers. And, you know, when we talked to Justin Watson when he was on the pod, and, you know, telling about how his time down, you know, working out with Patrick and, you know, how he caught that sort of, you know, he caught that feeling, that fever, right? That the Justin Watson, Patrick Mahomes sort of fever that they built that relationship down in Texas. So I'm not worried about that at all. These two guys are at the top of their game. They're committed to this team. They're having fun and they deserve it. But you know, those guys aren't missing a healthy meal or missing a workout. So, or any kind of field work that they need to do to stay at the top of their game. Fans shouldn't worry about that. They should, I think, relish it, you know, relish the fact that they're out there in the community, making a name for themselves, raising the stake of the Chiefs, right, of organization and getting them more well-known. I mean, that's, you know, I was going to ask you when you interviewed him, did you ask him about how he felt about beating my tackle eligible, you know, when he caught his fifth touchdown? Did that come up at all? Or
Unfortunately, I didn't. You know, interview got pushed back, and he was literally going on stage. So I had to keep it a real short.
I'm totally kidding, Jeff.
To that question I posed, which is, he had a really good answer. He said, you know, no, he's like, I like to have my fun, but he's like, I love playing football. Basically, you know, that's his first love. So he's not going to. And he said he loves playing football, and also, he not only loves the game itself, he loves the guys that he comes to work with. So it's like, he's not going to compromise that. So that's a very good answer, for sure. And I thought that was interesting, because he's really everywhere and anywhere this offseason. He's really owning the offseason.
If you look at some of these, you know, tentative, we'll call them, like the Chiefs took their depth chart down. Like they don't even post it until. But, you know, there's still a lot of prognosticators and stuff out there that keep track of all this stuff, which is great. It gives us stuff to read and look at. But there's not a rookie even sniffing right now at the starting lineup. I mean, it's just, you know, it's not even knock on wood, unless something crazy happens, you know, with an offseason injury. I mean, there's nobody that's going to really even be sniffing at or really even challenging, I think, for a starting spot. Of course, they're going to play. I mean, you know, Rashee Rice is going to get some time, and he's going to rotate in just the same way that other rookie receivers do, because you need to do that. I think, you know, Anaduke Uzoma, there you go. You know, I think Felix is going to get some rotations, but he's not going to beat out Omenihu, right? He's not going to beat out Karlaftis. I mean, he's going to get some time. I think Chamari Connor's got a shot at, you know, getting some rotation time in there, but they're pretty loaded at D-back too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's just nobody, you know, that's why probably it's just not as sexy, right, to see, like, nobody showed up, like, holy cow, like, you know, let's see if, you know, it's not like we had any of the first 10 picks in the draft that we needed to see. Right, like, are they ready? I mean, this team is pretty loaded, pretty stocked, which is, that's a real first world problem, right? To have that where, you know, and if you look at the depth chart, just visually, right? I'm looking at the R-Lads depth chart right now. And, you know, you look at, what they do is they'll put the veterans in like light blue, and then they mm-hmm. put the rookies in bolded green. All the bolded green is the back of the mm-hmm. depth chart. Like, it's all like packed in there, and it's all light blue at the front. And which is good. Like, you hope that, you know, we have the rookies that are going to come in, and we have the developmental players are going to take those spots eventually, you know, as these guys age out. But man, this team is loaded for bear. I mean, you know, I look at it, Jeff, and knock on wood, I mean, I can't see the Chiefs and the Eagles not being the top two teams odds wise to be back in the Super Bowl. Look, we know anything can happen. We have a long off season to get through and lots of podcasts to do before then. But man, the way that the Chiefs handled this draft, the way they've handled the off season, how they finished the year last year, and then you couple that with what the Eagles have done, which I think they had a stellar draft, mm-hmm. And you know, they're locking up Jalen Hurts and all that. I mean, whew, I can't see this not being, you know, at least according to the odds on paper today in May, right? I can't see this not being a Chiefs-Eagles rematch.
And we're going to get Chiefs-Eagles in Arrowhead during the regular season too. And next pod will be back to break down the schedule as it comes out and discuss those games. But if you enjoyed this show presented by Bet Online, please subscribe. We're available on your favorite directories, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Luminary, and TuneIn. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.